Hey, it's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy on Residence, coming to you this morning from Sheffield.
Oh, we're in Sheffield, the Philadelphia of the North, somebody said on Twitter. What do you think so far of this fine city?
Well, it's a very interesting place that has a lot of interesting things. Like, we saw a church that is being restored. It was from the 1100 period. It's quite a long time ago, isn't it?
Well, it also has a nice, very nice tram, by the way. I don't know how they financed that or when, but it is pretty amazing. Most amazing, however, is the sheer quantity of drinking that goes on. And we were out on Friday night and walking back around 8 or 9. And people were still just arriving at the pubs at that hour. Mm-hmm. And there were just lines of taxis waiting to take them home, drunk. But also ambulances setting up, getting ready for all of them to stumble out very drunk. So to me, this seems like, well, you know, I know a nice glass of wine or whatever is nice, but the sheer quantity of drinking that happens on every Thursday and Friday night seems like an amazing destruction of transfer of capital.
Right, right. I believe you refer to it as transferring your capital into urine.
Yeah, well, transforming it.
Transformation. Well, yes, you see pictures in the newspaper of women in short skirts, limbs akimbo, stretched out on park benches at 3 a.m., or in this case, 10:30 p.m. there's a little bit of that. Now, this morning I had another interesting British experience, which I really had never had before, is I went to Greg's.
Oh, my God.
I went to Greg's, and I got us a couple of coffees, and I got us some oatmeal, and so now I can, that's now been, I can check, tick that one, tick that box. I had the Greg's experience because also I think somebody mentioned about George Osborne. They asked whether or not he'd ever bought a pasty at Greg's. So the only pasties I know are the Cornwall Pasty Company, because Cornwall is where pasties come from, and pasties are from Cornwall.
Who's George Osborne? You mean Jeffrey Osborne?
Jeffrey Osborne, that's right. And speaking of dead journalists, what's up with this targeting by American intelligence agencies to kill journalists? It's getting very spooky.
Well, you're combining a few things there. But so we all know last week we were talking about the NSA listening in on all the phone calls. Well, it turns out now that GCHQ actually does more of it. They actually seize more conversations than the NSA, and then they give the NSA the information because GCHQ taps fiber optic cables. So Here we are looking for apartments with fiber optic, but they actually basically, it's a GCHQ cable. It's part of them. It's like goes straight back to them, any data going over there. So the British spy agency collects and stores vast quantities of global email messages, Facebook posts, internet histories and calls, and shares them with the NSA. But now related to this is a story about Michael Hastings. And we all know he wrote the book, The Runaway General, about General McChrystal, who was in charge of Iraq for a while and then Afghanistan and then that whole area. And, you know, with him in Iraq came all those assassination squads, and then to Afghanistan he brought drones. He was the architect of some of the drone policy. Mm-hmm. And Michael Hastings basically ended up getting him fired because of recounting conversations from the bar where he was dissing Biden and Obama and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But he was working on something else, and you know, he died in a suspicious car crash. Well, a lot of the mainstream blogosphere, like, snickers at anybody who says it could possibly be a conspiracy, despite all of this information coming out anyway, by the way, you know, about all the spying, all the stuff they're doing, all the constitutional you know, rights being violated,
yeah,
they still like snicker that anybody would, you know, suggest that there could be any foul play involved. But then WikiLeaks tweeted that Michael Hastings, in a few hours before his death, had been in contact with their lawyer asking about help and counsel because he believed he was being investigated by the FBI. The FBI now denies that they were investigating him, but he also has just been released to KTLA in Los Angeles by the police. They also have an email sent 12 hours before he died, and they've redacted who he sent it to, but you can kind of see it looks like it went to the people he worked for at BuzzFeed and Rolling Stones. I don't know, though, for sure. So it says, hey, then their name's redacted. The feds are interviewing my close friends and associates. Perhaps if the authorities arrive at BuzzFeed headquarters, it may be wise to immediately request legal counsel before any conversation or interviews about our news gathering practices or related journalism issues. Also, I'm onto a big story and need to go off the radar for a bit. All the best. See you soon.
Oh, yeah, baby. So this guy was targeted by intelligence agencies and assassinated.
Well, he could be, yeah, it looks, certainly looks suspicious, or, you know, at least if the people snickering, they should contact Mercedes and find out how the engine was thrown, you know, a long, far distance, but also that it caught on fire like that, because cars shouldn't catch on fire like that, as Ralph Nader would say. And the other issue, of course, is there was, people were saying that there was one article saying that he's been recently very paranoid, and he got very paranoid about the NSA stuff that they were tapping journalist material. He also got started getting really paranoid from the AP story that they were hacking the AP stuff. Mm. So people around him were saying that he had been, Cenk from Young Turks said that Michael Hastings expressed to him paranoia about this stuff, that he was being followed by the FBI.
Well, you know, there checks and balances is something that's built into the U.S. Constitution. And checks and balances is something that's been systematically destroyed over the past 50 to 100 years as it works in the Constitution. So you have what you would typically expect when you remove all the checks and balances. You have absolute corruption, and so you, the people in power have inside information, and they're killing people that get in their way. So that's what you'd expect. This is exactly what happens when you remove checks and balances, when you remove the pillars of a society, and you just could throw the keys to the castle to the most loudmouth maniac you can find.
Well, it could also be, you know, an indictment of this whole "I have nothing to hide," and let's all, you know, capitulate to being spied on, because some people do have a sense of self-worth and self-integrity and have private stuff and want to collect, you know, journalists do have something to hide. They have the sources to hide. They have information to hide. So when the NSA is swooping up everything, and this sort of paranoia can also, you know, he could have been meeting a source, because this is another suspicious thing, is that it was 4:25 a.m. that this accident happened. It was just not a usual time, the police said, for car accidents or, you know, motor vehicle deaths. It's more usually like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. when people coming home from the bar drunk. So maybe he was meeting a source and was paranoid, was driving too fast. I don't know. But also that sort of paranoia is just as bad, that it's system-wide. I was also reading this week, somebody really, a friend of Ernest Hemingway's, wrote a piece 2 years ago about the last year or two of Hemingway's life. And it sounded like this, where he was extremely paranoid. He, and I mean, this, the way this guy wrote it, Hemingway all the way up until the last two sentences sounds like the bonkers one. He had tried to commit suicide a few times because of the feds. He was obsessed with being followed by the feds. He was they put him in a mental hospital for a while where he was getting electroshock therapy. And he was still, he went to visit him in the mental institution, and Hemingway was still talking about the feds, they've tapped the phone. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh my God, my friend has lost it. This guy is crazy. And sure enough, Freedom of Information request many years later, and it turns out that he was, and that the feds had in fact tapped the phone in the mental institution outside his room. So he was right to be paranoid. He was being followed, but all his friends and family thought he was the crazy one.
Mm-hmm. Well, so was Aaron Swartz, right to be crazy. Mm-hmm. And he was hounded by the NSA and the MPAA until he killed himself. Now we have a suspicious murder or politically motivated assassination with Michael Hastings. So I think we're at a point where, instead of people curious about why there's so many folks who don't seem to care about this, it's more now a question of how do you survive? Because not everyone's going to survive this. And so at some point, there's a concept of triage, you know, on the battlefield, where you go through the battlefield and you say, well, this one we can save and this one we can't. So of the 100 people that I might know, I would think there's 10 or 15 I might save. The rest, I'm not going to. They don't have enough self-worth to motivate them to be curious enough to save themselves. So that's it. It's intellectual triage, and everyone's kind of on their own now. Good luck with that.
And somebody actually... I lost the page now, but somebody posted a link to a U.S. government website about reporting suspicious behavior in their own department. And they said a sign of suspicion is if you think you're being followed. This mm-hmm. is suspicious behavior, and it would actually target. So the fact that also that he was expressing in emails that he thought he was being followed by the feds would therefore, if he weren't, trigger being followed by the feds.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, switching gears to the economy for a second, you have what we've been predicting now for a while is now fully enforced. That is, the bond market is collapsing. Mm. So the bond market that's been rallying for 30 years, people started to say 4 or 5 years ago that it had peaked out and that it would reverse itself. And these are smart people like Mark Faber, Jim Rogers, others. Well, it took, you know, it took 5 years for that to happen. It took 5 years for the bond market to finally peak, as it did last summer, when interest rates got down to 1.5% on a 10-year government bond. And now it's reversing. So that bull market on bonds is over. The entire 30-year period of, let's say, post-Thatcher, post-Reagan financialization and repackaging of all your problems and refloating it with an extended maturity date is over. And now the economy, as rough as it has been for some or many, is going to get a lot rougher because now you're sailing into the teeth of rising interest rates. So this, combined with the government intrusion, results in things like Brazil, a million people on the street. We already have had social unrest across Europe. Now it's in South America. The global insurrection against banker occupation is now in South America. So you've got it in South America, Europe, you know, you've got it everywhere now. It's spreading because you've got two things. You've got the reversal in the bond market, and you've got government overreach and abdication of all civil law to for this grab. So especially now, because if nobody more dangerous than a billionaire who might lose a penny, you know, that's the most dangerous individual you're going to find. I mean, they'll stop at nothing to stop that from happening, including all kinds of nasty bits.
And of course, this bodes ill for Jeffrey Osborne's plan. You know, we call him Jeffrey Osborne in case you missed it, because up at the G8 in Belfast, outside of Belfast, apparently President Barack Obama kept referring to George Osborne in when they were having some sort of conversation as Jeffrey, but George didn't correct him because I guess that would not be the proper thing to do in the middle of a conversation being spoken to by the president. So he did, but the press did notice that he kept calling him Jeffrey, and they reported on this. But, you know, it doesn't bode well for his plan to use the housing market as an economic policy, that this is his one economic policy. When interest rates are rising, it's not usually a good time to try to sell a property.
Well, it means that mortgage rates are going to go higher. And in Britain, of course, most of the mortgages are on these tracker rates. So people's monthly mortgage expenses are going to start moving up, and you're going to have a wave of defaults. So the housing crash for 5 years ago, then you had a bailout period where the country became more indebted, which was great as long as interest rates remained at these 300-year low rates. But now that's reversing itself. So now the tracker rates are going to start adjusting higher. People are going to start defaulting on their mortgages, and you'll have another wave of this real estate crash here in the UK. And it all, of course, could have been avoided, but the contortions around which the government will go to explain why this is not their fault will be amusing, of course.
Yeah. Well, but also in the meantime, again, you know, here's headlines that pop up, and a lot of people like to deny it means anything, and they want to keep on continuing their lives as if it's all normal. And Canadian floods claim at least 3 lives and force evacuation of downtown Calgary. At least 3 people were killed when floodwaters that devastated much of southern Alberta led authorities to evacuate the western Canadian city of Calgary's entire downtown. Inside the city's hockey arena, the waters reached as high as the 10th row. And that's pretty, it's funny how they monitor and gauge things by their hockey arenas with the ice hockey.
Yeah, in Canada, that's, of course, the barometer of the health of the country would be what's happening in the hockey arena.
Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper on Friday called the level of flooding, quote, stunning, and said officials don't know yet if it will get worse, but said the water has passed the peak and stabilized, and noted that the weather has got better. Overflowing rivers washed out roads and bridges, soaked homes, and turned streets into dirt-brown waterways around southern Alberta. Royal Canadian Mounted Police told reporters 3 were dead and 2 bodies were recovered. The 2 bodies recovered are the 2 men who had been seen floating lifeless in the Highwood River near High River on Thursday. So,
yeah, well, you know, I'm sure that they should have a nice burial ceremony of those 3 people at the tar sands, because they died for the tar sands. The Alberta tar sands are the worst ecological disaster of the past 50 years. And now the people of Alberta have had a nice karmic wake-up call, like, hey, you know, the tar sands are an economic holocaust, an ecological holocaust. And we just lost a few people in Alberta because of it. Now, will Stephen Harper make that admission? No. So this is it's the time to try to get people to understand the global climate chaos is over. Now it's time to find high ground. And you're not going to be able to bring everyone with you to high ground. I mean, we were talking about it last night, and somebody said, well, Sheffield is the highest city in the UK. Well, that's important, isn't it? Because the UK is underwater. The floods are rapidly increasing all over Canada, all over the world. Yet India in Prague was completely underwater because of climate chaos, man-made global warming, as we've been saying for years. Now the time to try to get people to be smart about it is over. Now it's time to go to high ground. The education period is over. The democracy and constitution is over. It's time to reach higher ground.
So this is the region that has the tar sands, and Harper is a Calgary resident. He lives in this town of 1 million people. That was the entire downtown was evacuated, and an estimated 75,000 people had been evacuated. So he said, "This is incredible. I've seen a little bit of flooding in Calgary before. I don't think any of us, however, have seen anything like this before. The magnitude is just extraordinary. We're all very concerned that if it gets much more than this, it could have real impact on infrastructure and other services long term. So we're hoping things will subside a bit." So, of course, this is the one economic. This is the common policy across the world, by whether it's Barack Obama and his hope and change. This hope is the only policy we have, a prayer. Remember when the mayor of Detroit or the police chief of Detroit said there was so much violence, we can't stop it, let's all pray. We need to all pray together.
Right, and of course, remember New York just last year was completely flooded. Another big city. So, you know, this guy Stephen Harper is I think his parents may have dropped him on his head as a kid because he seems brain damaged in some way. He got hit by a hockey puck like Mark Carney. If he were had a shred of honesty or intelligence, he would tell the people that, you know, we're in grave problems due to the tar sands. But because the tar sands people lay him down on the ground and stick a funnel in his shfing-shfing and pour money up his hookah-hookah, of course, Stephen Harper will be playing the dumb idiot for as long as he can before he floods himself to death.
This is funny, though. At the grounds for the world-famous Calgary Stampede Fair, water reached up to the roofs of the chuck wagon barns.
Oh, no.
The popular rodeo and festival is the city's signature event. Mayor Nenshi said it will occur no matter what.
Yeah, they're going to have water games now. Instead of steer wrestling, they're going to have water buffalo wrestling. They're going to have cowboys with the water buffaloes. And, those are the Canadians. They're going to do it anyway. And like I said, I mean, a lot of these people are just going to die. You know, it's Darwinism. They're just too stupid to live, and nature's going to get rid of them. Their DNA needs to be taken out of the DNA pool, and, that's a good thing.
Well, so then we cut over to this story, which is Las Vegas Sands Adelson morally opposed to online betting. So this is another example of why our global economies are like they are, okay? Adam Smith said that, you know, men of the same industry meet, and then they would conspire and be engaged in a conspiracy against the public. And we have all these monopolies because nobody wants the competition. Nobody wants competition. Las Vegas Sands chairman and chief executive Sheldon Adelson is morally opposed to online gambling, calling it a toxin that will rob the young and poor. Quote, "It's a train wreck. It's a toxicity. It's a cancer waiting to happen," Adelson said on Bloomberg Television Money Moves with Deirdre Bolton. Adelson, who controls the world's biggest casino company by market value, also outlined his objections to online gambling in an opinion piece in Forbes. So he gets Bloomberg TV and Forbes as his platform. He's handed those, right, to push for his monopoly rights. The internet betting option is gaining momentum as U.S. states seek to tax a business forecast to generate billions of dollars. In February, New Jersey became the most populous U.S. state to legalize online gambling, following Nevada and Delaware. So he says younger people who can't afford it, can gamble while they're on their subway or a bus or a passenger in a car or while they're lying in bed in their birthday suits on their smartphones or their iPads.
Oh, Shelley. Well, as I've been saying, another long-term prediction is the casino gulag model. And you'd have two things. You'd have the rise of private prisons, which is true in America, the biggest prison operator in the world. It's all owned by private investors who convince municipalities to arrest people to keep their occupancy rates high. And online gambling, which is now becoming, as I said it would, a big deal. So eventually, you know, the model is that people are thrown in jail and their only form of recreation is online gambling. And that's the casino gulag model. And, of course, in playing games where you earn, gold on the online games for your jail master. So it's a slave labor, which is part of the casino gulag. And that's another big trend in America, too, is that they're allowing prisoners to work for 50 cents an hour or 50 cents a day as part of a new slavery is now legal in America. That's another constitutional amendment, and that's been overturned. I mean, they did outlaw slavery. Now it's back again. So this guy Shelley is a big blowhard who makes his money by engaging in what's it called, organized crime. Oh yeah. And he's got properties in organized crime-ridden Vegas and organized crime-ridden Macau. And he doesn't want competition because he might cut into the money that he gives people like Newt Gingrich to throw elections and write laws that help Shelley make some more illegal organized. Oh, but you can't say illegal anymore because there is no law. There's, I mean, it's the only thing that they don't want you to do is be a journalist and report on people like Shelley Adelson engaging in their nonsensical behavior. That you can get killed for that. But stealing money, that's okay. Murdering people, no problem. That's okay. It's all good.
Well, most people don't care. They're drinking and vomiting or gambling online. Because, you know, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie did project an 85% increase in state casino revenue from online gaming and an economic recovery. But this is the only thing, like I was saying, this is, you know, you just hope for good luck that day. That's the entire policy across the board for the U.S. on an individual level and a state and federal level is that, you know, you hope for good luck crossing that dilapidated, rusted out bridge.
Yeah.
You know, you hope it doesn't collapse today. Mm-hmm. And you hope you don't get flooded out in an extreme storm today. That's the only thing you have.
Yeah. So it's very medieval in that sense. You know, it's pre-Enlightenment. Mm. It's good. You know, you pray to a god that the bridge won't collapse, that Shelley Adelson won't rob you, that Barack Obama won't be spying up your sphinx with a big cucumber-shaped object. And, you know, that's, you just pray and hope. That's it. Hope. Meanwhile, the technology, of course, which is an outgrowth of the Enlightenment and the scientific revolution, is being co-opted and monopolized by a few types, insider types, to better their ability to impose an infrastructure of the casino gulag model. And they live in a cordoned off Shangri-La that... everything is good. It's all good. So social unrest is rising. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, let's go over to The Guardian and see what they have on their front page right
well,
here.
Well, I see the NSA guy, Snowden. Yeah. He keeps releasing more documents, more incriminating documents. It looks like his choice of where is he now? Shanghai?
Hong Kong.
It looks like his choice of Hong Kong is a good one to hold up. According to folks, you know, he's still out there. He's still kicking. He's still releasing documents. He's still maintaining the old American dream from 100 years ago when there was an idea of a country organized around rights, human rights and things. So he's still putting it out there. Obviously, people like that are under pressure. I would think the guy who wrote Blackwater, the book about Blackwater, Jeremy Scahill, he's probably feeling, you know, a little nervous, more nervous than usual these days. You know, interesting, isn't it?
Well, I would think that anybody, any sort of journalist inclined to investigate the surveillance state, especially the role of private contractors. The merger, the corporatism, the fascism going on there, they're going to be killed if they try to investigate. And that, you know, those who, the powers that be, I guess, have issued them a warning. But I want to turn to this story. This is an interesting one because this is one of the first stories you covered when you were in the UK back quite a while ago. McLibel leaflet was co-written by undercover police officer Bob Lambert. McDonald's sued green activists in a long-running David versus Goliath legal battle, but police role only now exposed. An undercover police officer posing for years as an environmental activist co-wrote a libelous leaflet that was highly critical of McDonald's and which led to the longest civil trial in English history, costing the fast food chain millions of pounds in fees. But the true identity of one of the authors of the McLibel leaflet is Bob Lambert, a police officer who uses the alias Bob Robinson in his 5 years infiltrating the London Greenpeace group, and is revealed in a new book about undercover policing of protest published next week. He was deployed by the Special Demonstration Squad, SDS, a top-secret metropolitan police unit that targeted political activists between 1968 until 2008, when it was disbanded. He co-wrote the defamatory six-page leaflet in 1986, and his role in its production has been the subject of an internal Scotland Yard investigation for several months.
Right, so it was one of these situations where they were trying to get these activists shut down by having them write something that that was basically going to trigger a lawsuit, and then it would quickly be shut down. But it turned out to be this long-running saga where the activists won. It's not that he was working with the activists; it's that the plan to plant false evidence seems to have blown up in their face.
Yeah, but, you know, everywhere you look, almost every single scandal, so-called scandal or so-called crime committed by activists is always, it appears to be a setup, a complete fabrication. And yet, well, most people, that's all you need is the ordinary person drinking and vomiting on a Thursday and Friday night, and they'll just see the headline, "Oi, that guy deserves to be killed. Oi, that guy deserves to be thrown in jail." So there they are coming for us right now.
Oh, great.
Well, so what I was going to say is, like, this is the story you see over and over in the U.S. as well. Of course, the FBI concocts and fabricates and provides all the material for every fake alleged terrorist attack that they stop. The latest one being this death ray thing. They stopped some guy was going to use a death ray against Andrew Cuomo. But it turns out it was a complete hoax by the FBI setting up some guy. They targeted some guy who was mentally unstable and offered to give him a death ray.
Mm-hmm.
And he believed it was a death ray, whatever that is. And he was going to target Andrew Cuomo. So the FBI says in Andrew Cuomo, they gave a press conference that this shows we need to stop terrorism. We need more surveillance. We need this. We need that.
Yeah, well, and they have to keep killing the journalists to make sure that the stories don't get out. You know, they can keep this pantomime going, this sick pantomime. And it's true. All of these attacks that we read about are instigated by the police. And, you know, this NSA story and the level of the NSA penetration and the spying and the UK doing the same thing but worse, it does, again, once again, make all of the claims of Alex Jones look less far-fetched. You know, that's the thing about Alex Jones, is that within 6 months to a year, what you thought sounded far-fetched is now part of the common knowledge. So he must live with the burden of facing the truth of these things all the time. It's quite, must be hard on him emotionally.
Well, there was that other story about TWA Flight 800 that, took off from New York on its way to Paris. When was that? And at the time, I remember that clearly, because NTSB urged to reopen review of TWA Flight 800 crash. Because it turns out the conspiracy theorists are right, they say. Former crash investigators are urging the National Transportation Safety Board to reopen the review of what brought down TWA Flight 800 in a fireball in 1996. Former investigators from the NTSB, TWA, and Airline Pilots Association suggest in a documentary that missiles caused the plane to explode near Long Island and kill 230 people aboard. The plane was flying from New York's JFK airport to Paris. But the NTSB spent 4 years investigating the crash and rejected the possibility of a missile. The board found that the plane's center fuel tank exploded, most likely from a short circuit that jolted the tank through wiring from a fuel gauge. But now these guys who actually did the investigation of the plane said they were forced to not tell anybody that what they saw was an external force hitting it, that it was likely a missile. And remember, at the time, there were dozens and dozens of people immediately interviewed on the news, and they said they saw a missile, like a glowing thing flying towards the plane. Mm-hmm. And now the suggestion that, you know, now people are asking, if this was the case, was it either an act of terrorism, or was it an accident by the Navy, where there's a naval base nearby? Were they testing something? Did they launch it? You know, what happened?
Hmm. Yeah, well, what happens is you cover it up, that this plane is brought down with a Stinger, a handheld missile launcher, and people are not as vigilant as they would ordinarily be had they been given that information. So then, you know, 9/11 happens in part because people were not vigilant to as they might have been had they been kept abreast of all of the terrorist activities leading up to 9/11. Then 9/11 happens, and the response is, well, let's go invade Iraq and kill 1 million civilians. It's total overreaction, which created probably another 200,000 Al-Qaeda-type hijacking-level terrorists. So it's a chain reaction that is leading to humanity's demise. It's like, it reminds me of that story of all the space junk orbiting Earth, that every time there's a collision in the space junk, it shuts off a chain reaction to create more of a space junk, a layer out there, which is blocking out the sun, you see? So it's all, like, kinetically connected in a way that's massively destructive.
Well, actually, the report says that there were 258 witnesses who said they saw a missile or some sort of a streak of light heading from the ocean towards the plane. And Jim Spear from the Airline Pilots Association, he was a former Air Force pilot, and he said that an initial test found explosive residue on the part of the right wing of the plane, which was retested without him present, and the first result declared a false positive based on the second one. He also found holes in the piece that he said indicated an explosion from outside the plane. And then another, Hank Hughes, who was the investigator from the NTSB at the time, he said that information about physical evidence from the crash was, quote, manipulated and, quote, a cause for concern. So again, this fits, however, with these fabricated criminal stories, fabricated political cases against activists, and yet the real stories are also fabricated away.
The cover-ups get as much attention as the fabrications. So this took, 15, 16 years to come out that the flight was taken down with a missile. So during those 15 years, think about it. You had a generation of people who were 5 years old. Now they're 25, 20, 22 years old. That's a whole generation has come and gone, and they don't remember this event. Their concerns are completely removed from anything having to do with this. They're off and running in some other new direction. So same thing with 9/11. Once 15, 16 years passes or 20 years passes, the story will come out just like this story has come out, saying, you know, it turns out that there was a cover-up. And a lot of people on the inside who were doing dot, 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 blah, 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 were involved. But a whole new generation will have come up, and there'll be three wars going on simultaneously around the world. There'll be economic collapse. There'll be some kind of plague, pestilence invading, and influenza outbreak or something. And they just won't have time to think about it. But it's coming. The disclosure that it was not anything near what has been said will come out, but it's got to come out during a time when people are busy doing something else.
Well, if there was a government cover-up, wasn't this insurance fraud? Presumably there were huge payouts and having to be paid by TWA and insurance companies for the victims.
Yeah, of course. Well, they're financially motivated, of course, to cover it up. But it also shows you how you can cover up the fact that a jet off the coast of New York was struck with a missile in what could have been a terrorist attack. And that was completely covered up for 15, 16 years. So it shows you that it's not impossible to cover up a terrorist attack in New York City involving missiles and explosions and airplanes.
Oh, people are already voting for fraud of the year. I think we're going to need to, you know, that little segment you did with Zeus. Mm-hmm. You interviewed this guy, Zeus Yannis. And you know, this guy, Zeus, he has a brother named Apollo. I know it sounds like a conspiracy, but it's true.
I thought you were going back to the old days. Those were popular names back then.
Yeah, but he's written a book about fraud and a fraudulent system and how to protect yourself from this fraudulent system. By the way, I want to tell you, you know, we're recording this on a Zoom H4N. And while I was holding this recorder near Max, I did see briefly up on the screen popped up something like data satellite. Like this weird message came up. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe like some sort of NSA satellite was going over and like sucking the information out of this this device.
Probably.
Or else I'm just paranoid and we're
getting enough data.
So somebody could have spiked our drink last night and we're like having hallucinations and actually not sitting here calmly recording our show, but we're actually ripping apart the room and eating the wallpaper and doing crazy stuff.
Probably.
Max is walking around. He had too much Greg's. You know, that could damage anybody's brain. It's proven that it turns you into a yob.
It's a winner. Oi! I want more Greg's coffee. Oi!
Anyway, so, you know, speaking of brain damage, I saw a report this week where they were reporting that they found, I think it was from Harvard, where they were saying that autism, there's a hugely more bigger case of autism near women who live near like busy roads and intersections. It might cause by diesel, but autism tied to air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one more thing. Max Kaiser was on This Week on BBC One this week with Andrew Neil, and he made a really cool short film. All you people here in the UK, you can, of course, go to the BBC website and watch it on iPlayer. Liar Politicians has also uploaded it to YouTube. For those who are not in the UK, the only thing you should be warned of is that he had to remove the audio, I guess, singing in the rain. Just the music, because obviously the copyright cartelists take down any YouTube video which has music.
Yeah, that was a good little film we made, and it was fun to be on the show this week with Andrew Neil. I was happy with it, got a lot of good points across. It was with Michael Portillo and Alan Johnson were really nice, and we were hanging out in the green room and telling stories. And the one thing I found out was that, you know, I noticed that both Michael Portillo and Alan Johnson had served as shadow chancellors of the Exchequer. So I said, well, you know, this is interesting because you both have been shadow chancellors, and what do you think of this, or, you know, the Help to Buy scheme? But they both wanted to forget about that, you know, that they were shadow chancellors, because they both had the same comment that, you know, you don't really think about your time in opposition. And when you're in opposition, you know, it's not really anything that you put on your resume as meaning anything, really. I didn't realize that. It's hard, you know, coming from the U.S. into the system, you when you see the debates on TV and things, you assume that both parties are in power, but that's not true. There's only one party is in power. The other one has no power at all. And this was quite clear, because here are these two guys who have been big in UK government for years and years and years. You know, they were quite pointed in saying, well, that was when we were in opposition, so there's nothing really to say about that.
Well, yeah, they said in particular being shadow chancellor is somehow worse than being the member of the other shadow cabinet. But what about the actual topic? So the topic was this new Banking Standards Commission report. Now, this commission was set up in order right in the aftermath of LIBOR, the biggest financial crime in financial history. in terms of the scale and the number of participants in the conspiracy, which went into the hundreds, and all the way up to the Bank of England and Bank of New York. So after this crime was revealed, the UK, of course, formed a commission, as they do after every huge crime, in order, of course, to put time between the crime and the population's anger. So they had this commission, and they've finally decided that what should happen is that in the future, maybe possibly one day, banksters or bankers who engage in misconduct, in reckless misconduct, a new classification of crime, reckless misconduct, they should be arrested. They didn't say what sort of prison sentence guidelines or what they should be, you know, what actually reckless misconduct is, but this should happen. This is just a recommendation for the government to consider. And another recommendation is that possibly, quite possibly, maybe, that these bankers who engage in reckless misconduct should have their bonus deferred for 10 years. Not taken away, but just deferred for 10 years.
Mm. I think it's a fantastic report. Had it come out in 1990. But, you know, it's way behind the curve here. There's been so much criminality under the bridge. The fact that the government is saying, we're thinking about maybe considering this to be reckless misconduct and a crime at some point in the future if we pass this law, just means that they're 20 years behind the curve here, and that's, which is the same thing as saying they're not doing anything.
Well, but however, they're downgrading the crimes that bankers commit. So what they did in rigging LIBOR, for example, was fraud. They defrauded investors around the world on hundreds of trillions of dollars of contracts with intent. Their emails clearly show it was with intent and for personal gain, in many cases, that they were rigging LIBOR rates. So that's fraud. There's crimes. They're already on the books of what this is, that you can charge them. So now they're saying, well, we're going to create a new class of crime. It's called reckless misconduct. And in the future, should you rig LIBOR, should you defraud investors, you will be charged with reckless misconduct, not with fraud, but reckless misconduct. And misconduct, of course, sounds like something that you get charged with at Eton, you know, in a little boys' school.
Yeah, that's right. So they either they say that it's that there's no crime at all, that what they're doing is technically legal, which of course is false. Or when they're caught committing fraud, they say it's a victimless crime, that nobody got hurt. Of course, both of those statements are false. So now they want to downgrade it, as you say, to a classification that would raise it above, let's say,
jaywalking.
But it's a completely useless.
Yeah. Well, it just, the use of the word misconduct, like I said, reminds me of what would happen in a boys' school, and it's, of course, a boys' club down in the city. So they're just maintaining this notion that crimes, like, it's putting a cap to the level of crime any banker could be charged with. That they can't be charged with a certain, they can only be charged with a misdemeanor, essentially.
Well, they just want to make it sound as though David Cameron is aware that there's something that needs to be done and said, and that's it's just pure nonsensical. It doesn't mean anything. It's stupid. Anyway, I thought I did a good job on the TV show this week. We know, obviously, there's a certain parameters that are in place to do a show like this and to make a film like this. And, you know, we got the points across. I mean, the panel all agreed that they were committing, they were committing acts of crime. And we were, you know, floating the idea around that there should be, you know, some very harsh penalties, et cetera. So it was, I thought it was very interesting. I haven't seen any negative comments. Everyone seems to agree that they thought it was a good presentation. I thought, have you seen any negative comments?
No, not at all. Everybody seems to like it, so it was a big success. You should watch it. So go to maxkaiser.com, actually. We have it up there. And, but your appearance, you're talking about these crimes and how they're downgrading the crime. But one of the ways they've been able to get away with the last 30 years of all these crimes is, of course, as you've pointed out many times, is the bull market in bonds. So when yields were going down year after year after year after year, they could always roll over the debt and extend and pretend and cover up all the crimes. So I just want to go over this, the bond apocalypse story in the last few minutes we have here, and show some of this data because it's quite stunning. Most people on the street won't have any idea that things have radically changed in the past week, but 5-year yields on US Treasuries rose a stunning 37% this week, the most in the 50-year records of Bloomberg data. So what does this matter to the or average person?
Okay, so your tracker rate on your mortgage, your monthly expense is going to go up 30 to 40% in the next couple of months. So if you were paying £1,000 a month on your mortgage, you're now going to start paying £1,400 on your mortgage, as we've been saying. But this is the problem. So then, when that hits in a month or two, people are going to be shocked. They'll say, "Oh my God, I never saw this coming. Oh, what do we do?" The government at that point will have fired every single monetary bullet that they could have possibly fired. There is no monetary solution at that point. They can't launch quantitative easing anymore and any more aggressively, really. It's just that it's at the end of the road. The jet full of fraud and accountants has run out of runway. That's finished. So you're just going to have to start paying more. It's called inflation. Inflation happens every once in a while. You're going to be hit with it in a big way. Your purchasing power is collapsing, and wages are increasing at less than 1%. Inflation, the stated inflation here, is raising at almost a 3%. The real inflation rate is at 9%. Add in the rise in mortgage rate due to bond market collapse, and now you're basically there's going to it's a huge crisis. Now, it's not. Mark Carney is starting at Bank of England. He'll be faced with a huge crisis, and they'll do some radical proposals that and be prepared for some radical stuff coming your way. But house prices, the bounce from the 2009 lows is probably over. It's going to start to move down again. Gold prices, which are manipulated down to try to discourage people from going to that side, to the dark side, as they see it, will at some point be released from their prison of paper prison. So that'll start moving up again. And so this 5-year grace period is now, I think, coming to a close.
No, not very many Americans have tracker rates. The only ones that did were those subprime and the adjustable and the ninja loans. So those all exploded and fell apart quickly. But for the US government itself, this is more important at this point because remember, a lot of what happened during this crisis was there hasn't been any deleveraging, despite what the news says. It's because basically private debts from the banks have just been moved to the public balance sheet on the Bank of England or the US Federal Reserve Bank, or the government's balance sheet. So the interest they have to pay on that, on these enormous amounts of debt, is going to rise.
That's right.
Some more austerity.
Well, the thing is that the way that they've been able to bail out all these bad banks is by taking all the debt and putting it on the government's balance sheet, and then through quantitative easing, they keep the interest costs artificially low. But if that's all going to fall apart, then all the debt that they use to bail out the banks. So the crimes of Royal Bank of Scotland and Barclays and Lloyd's of London, you've heard this phrase, it's a victimless crime, nobody's really getting hurt. That's not true as we've described it, but the pain has been deferred. So now, when suddenly your tracker rate goes up by 30% and the cost of your groceries go up by 30% in a stretch of 2 months' time, that's the pain. So the pain was deferred. But of course, the government and the media won't make that connection. They'll say this is sudden. They'll blame the Chinese. They'll say the Chinese are being aggressive in some way, and they've destroyed all the good work that we've done here at the G8, and it's all their fault. And they'll try to start a war over it, over what they themselves created 5 years ago by failing to simply be true to free market principles, where if you are caught making bad bets, you are, you know, you're not supposed to be kept alive by the government. That's not what capitalism is all about. You have the worst of both capitalism and socialism in the UK and the US, and you end up with what you've seen in Japan, the zombieism, where the government keeps the zombie banks alive and everyone else bears the cost and is forced to compete, quote unquote, in a way. It's just a complete mess.
Well, so, you know, that's something to look forward to, because this is not like in a positive way, but this is to coming soon. It's a continuation of where the 2008 crash was leading to, which is the annihilation of all these bad debts that have been holding the system back. But it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be a year, 2 years maybe, of utter chaos.
Well, you had a big bond crash in 1994. People probably don't remember that, but bond prices dropped by 20 to 25%. And that's when interest rates went from 6 to 8%. So here, interest rates start at 2%, and they're going to 4 and 5%. So instead of moving up 25%, they're moving up 100%, 125%. So that implies bond prices will drop by 60, 70, 80%, which is to say that they'll be obliterated, which is to say that every major bank in the world will be bankrupt, which is to say that governments will be forced to float $100 trillion worth of fiat paper, which is to say that gold is going to $10,000 an ounce.
Here, that's a good way to end. And thanks for listening to The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Bye, y'all!